I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I mean, that was quite high drama of a dog doing a wee.
Well, it's my personal assistant's day off. That is a joke. I deal with my own poo.
Welcome to a brand new series of Walking the Dog. Now, it's not often I repeat a guest on this show. In fact, it's not ever. But I've decided to make an exception in this person's case, partly because he's an exceptional man, but also because since his last appearance with a borrowed dog, he's only gone out and got his very own dog. I secretly think it's all because he wants to appear on my podcast again. My guest this week is the utterly hilarious comedy genius Lee Mack. Lee took me for a walk pre-lockdown, calm down everyone, in his local West London park to meet his silver Labrador puppy, Ludo, who is, by the way, absolutely adorable. But then let's face it, so is Lee. The man's a joy to spend a day with. We talked about how he was adjusting to dog ownership and the world of poo bags, his fear of flying, his views on class, and also his brilliant new podcast, I Can't Believe It's Not Buddha. It's basically him and his best mate, Neil, sharing their forays into mindfulness, meditation, and spirituality. If you haven't heard it yet, you must, because it's not only fascinating and thought-provoking, it's also utterly hilarious. It's a thing of genius. So do download it wherever you get your podcasts. I really hope you enjoy my walk with Lee. I'll shut up now, as I know he'll be saying, "All right, love, when do I get a word in?" Remember to do the usual, rate, review, and subscribe, and I'll hand over to the man himself. Here's Lee and Ludo.
Lee, do you think these shoes are all right?
Yeah. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is there any reason why this has taken so long to get going and that you don't like doing it at this time of day? Right, come on then. We're recording now, are we? Oh, we're off.
Come on, Lee.
How do you start your podcast? Do you say, "Hello, this is Lee," or do you just pretend we're mid-conversation?
I tell you what I do. I just start talking and then I might do the intro in a second just to build up some atmosphere.
All right. That's nice. You don't do that thing where you fake it by going, "Yeah, no, that is a good point." So, and then like, "Oh God," even when you join us, we're having fun. You don't do that. That's a good way, isn't it? You just pretend. God, these guys. Wish I could be part of that world. Right.
I am going to introduce you because this is a really special moment for me. Because Lee Mack is the first person who's ever come back again to do a second walking the dog.
This is my second visit. And the last time I came, I was a typical non-dog owner in that I just, you know, to use that old comedy cliche, I was the cat person. Got three cats and all these comedic things people do about the difference between cats and dogs are based on truth. You know, they're just low maintenance, right? And dogs are high maintenance. And so you lent me a dog last time.
I did. We borrowed Livy from the Dogs Trust, who is a collie cross. And my abiding memory of that, Lee, were two things I remember. The first was when Livy went to the bathroom, you said, "Help, call the police." And then you said to me, "There's a lot of talking to people with dogs, isn't there?"
Well, here's the thing, because...
So what I'm saying is, I then decided, even though we'd had a lovely day, you perhaps would never get a dog. So
I would like to pretend that I went away from that and said, she's made me think differently about life. I see it more that despite that day, I got a dog, rather than because of it. And we've been talking about it. We have actually been talking about it for about 25 years, me and my good lady Tara. I've been saying, should we get a dog? And then we thought, no, we'll have some kids instead. We had three kids. And then, if we get a dog now, all the kids are a bit young, what if the dog attacks the kids? Yeah, let's not do it. This carried on for years and years, and then our youngest is 8, and we thought, well, if we don't get a dog now, we'll probably never get a dog, because if you're going to get a dog, at least have a dog so the kids can grow up with the dog. I grew up with a dog, and from the age of 7 to 21 he was alive, so he was part of my youth. So I thought that'd be nice for them to have that as well.
And can we, before we go any further, can we introduce your dog, who...
Yeah, who I now have in my hand, I should say. We're not just walking.
Who is astonishingly beautiful.
You just said he looked like me before we went to this podcast. We were having a coffee and you went, he actually looks like you. And I thought, oh, okay. I mean, I can't think of a dog in the world. I mean, you could do a competition of the billion dogs in the world and find the most beautiful, and I would still not want to look like it.
Well, you've got similar eyes. You've both got very piercing blue eyes.
And we both have an unusual way of cleaning ourselves.
Can you introduce me to your dog, Lee?
Right, so this is Ludo. Now, first of all, the name. Well, I'll tell you the breed first, actually.
Which way are we going, Lee?
In this conversation.
Yeah.
Because I did say...
Should we go that way?
His name's Ludo. Actually, I'll tell you his breed first, which was immediately followed by, which way are we going, Lee? And I thought, all right, we're just chatting. Have a direction with your conversation, know where you're heading, and go straight for it. Are you Alan Partridge? Right. But you meant which way we're turning. We're turning left, yes. Oh. So this is Ludo, who is a Labrador. I don't know if you've ever heard of a Labrador before. They're a very unusual dog. Yes, he's holding a stick.
Lee, he's got a stick in his mouth.
You are saying that like it's the first time you've ever seen a dog, as opposed to your 100th podcast.
To be fair, you've seen my dog.
He's a silver Labrador, the more unusual Labrador, and a lot of people think he's a Weimaraner. We got him as a puppy, and he's... I did my little bit of research. See, if you look online and you have little league tables, what is the dog that is most friendly with kids? And what is the dog that doesn't bark too much? And what is the dog that is easy to train? Labrador or the Manchester United or Manchester City. They always seem to be near the top of the league. And that is why we got him, because we thought we'd play safe. But then I thought, I want something a bit different. Let's go for a silver one. Because that way, he looks like a Weimaraner, which I quite fancy, but did badly in the league table.
Did it?
Well, not as good as the lab, but nothing can beat the lab. That's why they're so popular. Mm. But going back to the conversation you said earlier, what I didn't realise about the silver lab is that it would draw more attention.
Ludo likes the producer. He's a bit of a ladies' man.
Yeah, he's heading that way, isn't he? But he likes... I don't want you to be... jealous. I don't think it's... I mean, when you first saw him, when he got out of the car, then you went, I think dogs really like me. And we're 5 minutes in and he's already bored with you. And he's moving on to your producer. But in some ways, I feel similar.
Do
you?
Can
you give her the mic? No, of course not.
Do you...
I must stop you. I think he's defecating.
I've got the bags.
I will take control of the situation. Watch me in action. Because I know you probably don't trust me as a person that can... It was a wee. Right. I always get mixed up. The liquid one that comes out of the sticky bit, that's the wee, right?
That was quite high drama of a dog doing a wee.
Well, it's my personal assistant's day off. That is a joke. I deal with my own poo.
That sort of alludes to what I was saying earlier, which is I felt... You were quite stressed beforehand about the amount of...
Before I got
the list of things you had to tick off and...
Yeah, well, we did text you, didn't we, and say, right, we're in the shop, what do we need to get? What do we need to get? Do we need to get this? And you said, I don't think a rubber ladybird is essential at this stage. It's like the shop was only going to be open for one day for the rest of our lives, and it was now or never. It was a panic buy, you know, because I thought it might be like... You know, there was no toilet paper for a while and no flour.
Yeah.
I thought there might be a run on rubber toys or those dental things that they eat to make their breath smell nicer.
Yes, dental sticks are great.
Are they good? We haven't done that yet. Right, there seems to be more defecation or urination. He's definitely doing one or the other. Hold the coffee, please. It's a runny poo, a very runny poo. I will now pick it up. I am picking it up. It goes in the bag. Bag tied. In pocket. And now treat. Hang on.
Oh,
treat.
Yeah.
Treat. There you go, Ludo. Sit. Lie down. Lie down. Go on. Lie down. Lie down. Emily, will you lie down? Oh, there you go. Oh, there you go. Marvellous.
Ludo, good boy.
The children chose the name Ludo. I wanted to go for Smokey because he's a grey colour. The kids felt that it might suggest he smokes.
I'm with the kids.
Yeah. Ludo, and also I think of Ludo as being a very plasticky, bit rubbishy game. But actually, I don't think kids play Ludo.
Oh, that's nice to say in front of him.
Yeah, but A, he can't understand English, and B, the kids don't know that game. They don't really play Ludo because it's not available on the PS4.
I think of Ludwig Kennedy. Do you know him?
I do, yes, because believe it or not, despite the act, I am a bit cultured. The violinist who sports Aston Villa. Yeah? I know it's Nigel, get on with it.
He was a sort of 1970s intellectual, wasn't he?
Mm. To be honest with you, the 1970s was a pretty rough time. Even I was a 1970s intellectual. That says more about the 1970s. What are you doing? Come on.
Lee.
Oh, my God, I think he's eating deer poo.
Are there a deer here? We should say as well, we're in Bushy Park.
And I have to say, my dog is doing very well with the training. The one area of training he isn't doing well at is coming back to me, hence me keeping him on the lead, because I've always got one eye on a Benton situation. Is it Benton, that dog?
Is that the name? Fenton?
Benton!
Fenton.
Fenton, was
yeah.
it? Fenton. And I'm always worried that... Yeah, I mean, he just doesn't come back, so...
You see, you went Benson, because, again, 70s smoking reference.
Benson.
Let's go back to...
I thought you meant the butler from Soap.
You had dogs when you were growing up, didn't you?
Correct. So I had... a dog. So I lived in... You'll have to look back and see how much of this is repetitious. I can't remember, of course. I mean, it's news to me that it's my second appearance. But come on, Ludo.
Ludo.
Have a stick. Go on. Look, there you go. Have a stick. He likes a stick. Do you know what? There's deer around here. I was going to let him off. So I lived in a pub in the 1970s, and a dog turned up on the doorstep, pregnant.
As with your mum and dad and brother.
No, we're puppies. that's how I got introduced to them. Oh, I wasn't expecting that to come out. Will you be my mum and dad and brother? A dog turned up at the pub in the winter, and it was like, it had a bit of husky in it. We don't know quite what, I think it was a mongrel, but it was a big golden fluffy teddy bear type dog.
Mm.
Kind of dog that you think, why would anybody not want to keep this dog? It felt like someone had kicked her out even.
Yeah.
And so she turned up. My dad gave her the very healthy food of pie and mushy peas that we used to sell in the pub, and the dog thought, oh, that's the right result, and kept coming back every day for pie and mushy peas. So eventually we just kept the dog. We went to the police and no one claimed her, so we kept her, and she had puppies, and we gave the puppies away, and then that dog stayed in our house till I was 21.
Because your parents ran a pub, so she was one of those pub dogs that you used to see a lot.
Yeah, she was very much. And this is the 70s, when dogs would roam the street with no microchipping, no collars.
Yeah.
There was dog poo everywhere. And I'd like to pretend that I found that outrageous, when in fact, that was my dog. I would say my dog was 90% responsible for the poo in this country. Because he lived outside, because he was a wild dog, well, a stray dog when we found him, and he had a husky bit in him.
Yeah.
And hated the warm, just loved the cold. Then she would constantly just live outside. So she would just, especially with a pub, the door's always opening and shutting.
You said he and she, is it a male or female?
I keep forgetting, because it's been a while. I'm now 52 and I have now got a male dog.
What was the first thing you felt? Were you scared when you got Ludo?
Yeah.
Very excited. Kids are excited, presumably. Tara's excited.
We all drove to Birmingham to pick him up.
Yeah.
Come on.
Also, he's a Birmingham dog.
Oh, yeah. Listen to him bark. You'll hear the accent, which you think is a joke, but apparently animals do have accents. Did you know that?
Is that right?
Well, cows do. a cow will moo, have a regional moo. Well, I did a science programme on Sky, and that's what I was told, and that's what I was happy to tell the nation. I hope they did their research. A French, or maybe it's a country, a French cow moos differently to an English cow.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. That's a cutie.
That is a cutie.
Oh, look.
A little dog's arrived. My dog is obsessed with dogs that are small. Oh, is he a bit worried?
Oh.
Yeah, my dog is, Ludo, will sort of jump on him in a friendly way because he's smaller.
Hello, sweetheart.
Hello, darling. Are you worried? Do you want me to stand that way?
Are you there?
He's scratching his bottom on the ground. Oh, he's had a stroke. I can't work it out.
This dog, Ludo, is... hello, sweetheart. It's okay. Come on, it's okay. I'm going to take this dog out of here. Come on, there you go.
Marla was worried.
Did you see my dog handling there?
You did very well. Well, I say dog handling. You went towards the dog and the dog ran away from you in a way that suggested a past experience with that dog.
Can I say I averted a potentially very ugly situation there?
Well, if that's the narrative you want to play out, then yeah, you were very much Bruce Willis in that Die Hard situation. I just saw a woman going for a dog with her hand and the dog pelted it, but you know.
So, Lee, you're in the car going to...
To Birmingham.
Oh, the whole family made the trip?
I think it might have been Wolverhampton. It was the Midlands.
And the whole family made the trip?
The whole family went. We were very excited, yes.
We've got the travel suites.
We've got the travel suites. We've got the cage that I did a lot of research on. Oh, sorry. The crate. Because I'm learning. You don't say cage because I can only assume dog owners don't want to feel like they're putting a dog in a cage. Yeah. Even though every bit of evidence suggests it's a cage. But it's called a crate, which I traditionally associate with wood. Have you ever seen a metal crate in your life?
I think there is something horrible sounding about a cage.
I mean, you know, let's give it a different name then. You know.
It just sounds...
My uncle, he's not in prison, isn't he?
No,
he's in a massive crate, which is much more palatable. It's a cage.
But sometimes...
Can I just point out he's not? That was me making a point. You know what I mean?
Take your coffee. So go on. We tend to do this a lot, Lee, because you and I get distracted easily because we have a... We're not neurotypical, are we?
Well, what is neurotypical? I don't mean scientifically what is it. I mean, what is...
It means our brains...
I know what it means.
Discovered... Okay, don't get sensitive.
I know what it means. I mean, if you'd have said we're not the typical type of person, I'd go, yeah, but what is typical?
Well, I suppose people's brains do tend to work in a standard pattern.
Right.
And we've both been told that we have ADHD.
No, you've been told, I suspect.
You suspect.
You've had the test, haven't you?
Yeah.
And I have done the test, but for a joke. So I started joking around on it. And do you get distracted easily? And I drew balls and a willy, you know, that type of thing. As an adult having it, and I do suspect I've got it, because I haven't spoken to people about it, then it has its ups and its, you know, its positives and its negatives. And the positives are, certainly in my job on panel games and stuff, that I can hear seven people talking, whereas some people are just focusing on the one person talking.
Yeah.
So you can tune in to what suits what you want to talk about, and you can... But I think we've talked about this before, the idea that when I go to a pub... Well, I don't go into pubs anymore, but when I used to go to pubs, I'd often go, oh, God, that was all kicking off, wasn't it? They go, what was? The conversation behind us where that row broke out. And they go, what brought round? I go, you're not serious. That huge argument. And the people go, I didn't notice anything. I started thinking, am I just nosy? But to me, it is like having 8 or 9 radio channels going off at once.
That's what it is.
And most people can tune into one, but you tend to tune into 9. The problem is, you're not listening to any one of them succinctly enough. Or you have mad obsessive concentration on one thing.
Right, Lee, we've really got to get back to when you got Ludo.
Oh, sorry.
So you're in the car.
Yeah.
You've gone to Birmingham.
We've already been to Birmingham. Well, let's call it the Midlands, because I can't remember exactly where it was. We went to the Midlands and we checked out the dog. We chose the dog from a litter. And then we went back on the correct date where we were allowed to pick him up. The first date was extremely exciting and actually hard, because you're choosing which one. And that's really hard because they're very young. It's very hard to tell them apart at that age.
Yeah.
And they wanted to go for the one that was you know, the natural instinct is to go for the little one that's jumping up and down and looking like she wants some attention. But I wanted to go for the placid one that was calmer. And eventually I got my way. We went for the calmer one.
You see, that's interesting. I would have obviously gone for the small one jumping up and down wanting attention.
Because it looks like, oh, this little girl loves me. She's going to want my attention all the time. Yeah, I know you. You're needy. Whereas me, I just want this thing in my
psychopath.
Peripheral vision now and again.
What was the first night like, Lee?
It's like having a kid, you know. You can get told all the things in your NTC classes, but when you have a... Is it NTC? Is that the right phrase?
NCT.
NCT.
I don't have children, FYI, but I know that. Yeah, go on.
FYI?
FYI, I said.
No, I was joking because I got NTC wrong. I'm not explaining them all. So the first night, we thought this dog... We got told the dog would howl for its mother and be really upset, and it also needs to go to the toilet a lot. Because it's a puppy and it'll be nervous. And so we moved an old sofa into the kitchen, and I was working that week and I had to be up early. So Tara said, I will sleep downstairs for the first few nights with the dog. And I think, you know, she was playing the, isn't this nice of me doing this? I suspect she was trying to get first bit of bond. Do you know what I mean? Because we've got a cat. Since I last did the podcast with you, we bought a new cat. And the cat is known, it's a British blue, and they're known for picking on one person of the family, bonding with them over everybody else. And I picked that cat up, that kitten up. Oh. And ever since then, she's always been my sort of, she follows me.
Hey.
Yeah, now you're pointing at a deer there, aren't you? We may have a fencing situation. I never know when the rutting season is, but if he saw them, he would be over like a shot. We're looking at about a dozen. Very horny, and I mean they've got horns. Deer. Should we call them stag?
Yeah.
We're looking at some stags.
And are they aggressively, or are they quite docile?
The hell do I know? I'm a stand-up comedian who's 52. I bought a dog 8 weeks ago. That is as near to nature as I have ever been. And so suddenly you see the dog, you go, can I ask you, Lee, the rutting stags, are they, I don't know, I know as much as you. Lee, can you hear the bird song? Would I be right in saying it's the male chaffinch? I have no idea. All I know as much as you. So let's just walk quickly.
I just thought, given that this was your manor, you brought me here.
Listen, I come to this park occasionally. What I don't do is sort of grab their testicles to see how far I can go before they get aggressive.
Bye-bye, dear. Let's
see you, love.
Bye.
Oh, sorry, I thought... I was getting confused. Sorry, I saw three people approaching the other way. You said, bye-bye, dear. I saw an audience and felt the need to say, all right, bye, love. Well, that is a problem, isn't it? God, it's boiling, isn't it? Sorry. I get hot very easily. I think I'm having menopause. I'm just taking my next jacket off. I'll keep going until I'm naked. Can you hold my dog, please?
Alan Cochrane, who I do the radio show with, is Frank. He has a whippet called Lucky, which I think he just named it Lucky so that I could say, when did you get Lucky? And he could go, However, one thing I...
You know, similarly, I wanted to call him your vasectomy. When did you get your vasectomy?
It would be good.
I always think of Lucky as being, you know, that that's a catchphrase in our house, because you know that old joke?
Well, when did you get Lucky? I'll say it is. I've seen your wife. She's a stone-cold fox gorgeous.
Yes, well, I mean, I'm talking about the... You know, funny you should say this. We talked about this the other day on... with Roisin Connerty, you know Roisin?
Oh, yes, lovely.
Her sister met Tara and said, I assume you two have been together like after you became a comedian and a bit of money. And I said, no, we met before I ever was a comedian, when we were at university. And she looked aghast at why this woman would be with me. And do you know what she said? Did you save her life or something? I thought, that's an incredible, bold statement to make after 5 minutes of meeting someone.
Oh, Lee, look at that big one.
Is that a German Shepherd? Did we talk about this in the first podcast? That was bitten by an Alsatian and made the national papers. Do you know this story?
Oh, yes.
Did we talk about that?
No, I can't remember. number of... Tell me what happened again. Remind me briefly.
After this podcast, we'll go be socially distanced coffee at my house in the garden, and I will bring down the newspaper that I found recently from 1970-something of me being page three of the Sunday People. I know, it's not what you're thinking. I mean, I was a chubby kid, but I didn't have boobs.
So you were bitten. So,
bitten, yeah. But
so you had to. Do you think getting the dog when you, your dog, pub dog, as I call your dog, pub dog, made you overcome the fear of it?
I wasn't scared. The truth is, I just got bitten by a guard dog, and there was a spate of guard dogs biting people. And we can't go carry on because there's a German Shepherd. If we go left, there's a rutting stag. Why don't we split the difference and go just past that man with the knife? Oh, he's having another wee. Do you know what I find gobsmacking? I think I remember saying this to you, that I am one of these people, before I had a dog, I thought I would struggle with picking up the poo. Mm. Never did I realise that it would completely be the opposite, where I'd be so proud that he's had a poo. It's one of the most pleasurable things I do, is pick up the poo. Because I go, oh, he's had a poo. I know he's going to be all right now. He's not going to do it in the house. He did it outside. And it was a solid one. It wasn't runny. And I've come running in. I've held it in a bag and gone, feel that. You know, and how proud I am that he's done a solid poo. That's a long journey from, I can't go near that. It becomes like the highlight of the day because we're like, oh my gosh, she's had a poo.
Is that, I mean, I haven't had kids myself, but is it similar to when you have a kid in that sense, that there's stuff that you think, oh God, I'd never do that?
Oh, listen, when we had a child, my wife used to regularly smell the wee in the nappies when they were very young and go, oh, it's such a sweet smell. Have a smell and push it so far to my face that sometimes it would touch my face. And I used to go, that is disgusting. And she was known on the odd occasion to do it with poo. She was going to go, oh, there's something very sweet about baby poo, early baby poo. And be wafting it near my face. And I'd be like, what are you doing? But the wee carried on for quite a while. The wee was like, it has a very sweet smell, she said. I mean, I think she wanted to bring it out as a fragrance.
And so what's changed for you? And how has the dog changed your house, do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what we did. We spent a long time following the rules of saying, no, don't, you know, show them who's the boss. So don't let them up on the sofa. And we wanted the kind of dog that jumps on the bed and the sofa and all that. But we got told don't, because if you start letting them do that, they won't know who's the boss. And then you'll have problems in other areas. But we've decided he's allowed on the sofa that we've brought in the kitchen, right? And it's because he's stopped doing that nippy thing, stopped biting. And so now what I do is I go to the sofa and I lie down on it, and he immediately jumps up and lands on my belly and just looks adoringly at me as he just lies there. And it is the most relaxing thing in the world. You know that feeling of if someone's lying on top of you? I don't mean it in a sexual way. But if someone's lying on top of you, there's something very relaxing about that.
Yeah.
Have you ever had...
Like having a baby or a small child on you.
Just
a
weight.
Like that,
any
it?
Sort yeah. of weight on you. It's the reason yeah. why we lie down and we put cushions on us.
Yeah.
Feeling of security. But a dog, especially his age, because he's not a fully grown dog yet, just lying on me. And if I feel a tiny bit stressed and he just lies on me, I immediately feel calmer. To the point where I was thinking of getting some sort of papoose. And taking him to work so that, you know, if the show isn't going so well, I've got a dog lying on me. But never mention it, obviously.
Do you think he does make you a bit calmer?
Well, I'm not trying to shamelessly promote my podcast, but I'm into meditation at the moment, which I'm sure we will talk about. Otherwise, what is the point of me doing this? So maybe that has a bit. But having said that, coincidentally, I got this dog at a time when I've completely slackened off from the meditation. But no, it definitely works. It's
Well, actually, maybe this is a good time to talk about your podcast, because to me it's interesting that you've got the dog, which I associate with having beneficial mental health.
Can I just say, before you ask me that question?
Sure.
ADHD. Man in front of us did something with his coat.
Yeah.
I'm convinced something has fallen out of his coat onto the floor.
Oh, that's really...
And we're going to have to call him back. However, yeah. I don't want to take the risk in case yeah. it's an old bit of paper and it looks like a complaint. So we will pass casually.
Oh, that's
we'll pass amazing. Casually. Then we'll, you know, we've passed him. We'll pick up the case. We'll see what he's dropped, and then we'll say, "Excuse me, mate." Or if he says, "Well, I know it's an old crisp
really?
Packet."
Do you know what?
What's it to you, Mister? You know, we'll have aggravation and everything, won't we?
I feel like Rosemary and Thyme, the detectives.
Something dropped. What is it? What is it? Let's have a look. Something dropped.
This is the big mystery. What dropped out of the man's pockets? It was.
Oh, it's a coronavirus mask.
Shall we pick it? Okay, here's a dilemma. Did he mean to...
I don't think he did.
I'm going to call him. You're the celebrity, so it might be more embarrassing.
Yeah,
I call him? Excuse me? Excuse me?
I think you dropped something.
Your mask?
Thank you. I thought you might need it.
Sorry if you dropped it on purpose and we weren't shaming you.
No, thank you so much.
No worries.
No props.
Yeah, no.
I thought we dealt with that really well.
Yeah, we did. We gave it a light-hearted touch. We weren't shaming you. And yet,
as you say, luckily, I did it all.
Of course. You know, I was very sort of like, it mortifies me, the idea, if someone drops a bit of paper, because it was definitely accidental, and if that had been a bit of paper, and we'd have said, excuse me, you've dropped a bit of paper, he'd have thought, well, all right, we all make mistakes, because it was definitely a mistake.
Sometimes it's worth risking humiliation to do a good thing.
I love doing a good thing. I'm sometimes tempted to run up to someone and say, here, you dropped a fiver, even though they didn't, and just giving them a fiver, just because... they think I'm so great, and that's worth a fiver, isn't it? I mean, listen, how good would that... That person's going to feel great all day, you're going to feel great, and it's cost a fiver. And if you can't afford a fiver, you know, a pound, 50p, anything. Do you know what I mean? Or, small child, if you've got a small child with you, you can do it with 2p. Get the small child to run after the adult with 2p. They think your child is really cute, it's only cost you 2p. The daughter thinks she's done something great. It's a life-affirming thing. Isn't that wonderful? What you can do if you lie to people.
I've noticed, and I do now want to talk about your podcast.
Oh, yes.
Because I noticed when we came out the first time with the dog.
Yeah.
But it wasn't your dog. You had said the thing that you find most difficult is sort of all people talking to you and all that interaction. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say something quite personal.
Okay. I felt you know that I might not answer you.
I know. I felt you've been a bit...
That's an incredible response. I might not answer you. Yeah, I know. But I'm going to push on regardless. Okay.
I felt you've been slightly less anxious about that. I feel you're a little bit more relaxed now, if
well,
I'm totally honest.
Well, of course, when I was with you, I had a dog that you lent to me from some sort of dog borstal or something. And I didn't know if it was an Asbo dog.
Sorry,
and don't use Asbo dog.
Just to clarify, that's the Dogs Trust, who are a very reputable
yes,
dog
no,
rescue.
No, I'm saying it lightheartedly, and I fully support the Dog Trust.
I feel like you're a bit calmer, Lee.
Well, because I just wasn't... I'm not... Listen, I'm on the telly, and that is a fact. And occasionally people come up to you and they talk to you, and I'm fairly private. I'm quite a private person. I don't do social media, any of that nonsense. And so this is the closest I will do it to social media, is a podcast. And indeed my own podcast now, which I'm sure we're going to get to at some point. Because as I said before, otherwise, what is the point in me doing this? And so I'm, you know, I don't mind a hello, how are you, yeah, blah, blah, but I don't like having too many conversations with strangers, but that's not just because I'm on the telly, it's because I've always been like that. A bit private, you know, so I'll say hello to people, but I don't want to. But you have to let go of that with a dog, especially a dog like this, because it's a silver Labrador. So you have to get ready for the same conversation at least 20 times on every walk, and it goes something like this. Oh, that's, isn't he lovely? What is he? And I always start off with a dog, never gets a laugh. And then they go, yeah, but what kind of dog? And I go, it's a Labrador. Oh, I've never seen a silver Labrador. Yes, a lot of people think they're Weimaraners. Oh, I didn't. Oh, and how old is he? He's 16 weeks. And then, of course, you reciprocate. And what's your dog? Well, it's a Dalmatian. You must have known that. Well, all right, I'm just having a conversation with you. How old is he? Shall I count the spots? Oh, I thought it was worth more, and she doesn't laugh, and then blah, 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 continue. This goes on every single time. Not one person has ever come up to me since I've had a dog and go, I like your shoes, where'd you get them?
Be fair, that didn't happen that often before you got
No, it didn't, and to be fair, look at me. You know, I was using it as an example. No one's ever come up to me and gone, oh, it's a nice day, isn't it? And it's, there's a nice coffee shop around there. None of that. You can let go of any conversation about anything other than your dog and his or her dog.
I quite like that interaction though, because
I have to say, yeah, I sort of do as well. It's quite, it's repetitive, but you've got to let go of it. If you think you're going to walk, take your dog for a walk and not talk to at least 20 people that day. But do you know what? I have to say, I do like it. At first I thought I'd be wary of it, but I quite like it because it reminds you that actually most people are pretty cool, aren't they? They're nice, yeah. They're relaxed, they're nice
people.
And it's
about being open, and it's about living in the present, which brings me neatly...
Oh, nice.
...to... I can't believe it's not Buddha.
My podcast. But sadly, we've run out of time. And then I'll say, but what is time? And you'll say, I don't care, we've run out of it.
Yes. Which is the podcast you started recently with... He's kind of your best mate, isn't he, Neil?
Yeah, he's one of my oldest mates from university. He's called Neil Webster, and he's... We went to uni together. I was a mature student, and I think he was a bit older than the others.
What uni was it again? Are we allowed to say?
It was Brunel University. Well, it started off when we joined as West London Institute of Higher Education, and then halfway through became Brunel. Thank God, because the first one sounds more like one below a polytechnic catering college, and the second one sounds like I now know how to build bridges. And you probably missed all that. I just dropped my mic. We went to university, and one of the first things I remember him telling me was, I thought, I'm going to like this guy, because one of the first things he told me was he'd been mugged and then decided that he'd not been, you know, he'd just moved to London to go to university, got mugged, was worried, and so he decided he can't just stay in the house for a few days, which he was doing. He decided to face the world again, you know. Mm. So he got a coat hanger from his bedroom, a wire coat hanger, and he put it on his head and spent the next week just going outside only with a wire coat hanger on his head, on the basis that he thinks you're not going to mug a man who's got a coat hanger on his head. And I sort of see the logic in that. You go, if you've got a choice of all the people, why choose the man with the coat hanger on his head? You're chancing it, aren't you? Because who knows what he's capable of if he's capable of putting a wire coat hanger on his head? And I thought, oh, I like this guy. And then he wrote a little movie, which was a sort of like Spinal Tap type movie. And he knew I started doing stand-up, so he asked me to be in it. I said to him, when I got a job in telly, right, doing stand-up show in the 90s, I said, look, you can write jokes, can't you? Just write some jokes for me and you get paid per joke. One thing led to the other. He ended up owning a production company that ended up making Would I Lie to You? Blah, blah, blah. And then he's now got his own production company, lives in Scotland. But he's always been, you know, a writer and behind the cameras. And although when we met, we were in sketch shows together and things. Mm. But he soon gave up that side of performing. But we've always made each other laugh. Hope, you know, even if it's just, even if no one else finds it funny, we've made each other laugh. So we've been talking about the idea of a podcast for a while. And then, coincidentally, we both got interested in the world of meditation.
Did that have anything to do with giving up drinking, do you think?
No, that wasn't the order of events. The first event was, I went out for a walk with Rob Brydon, who said... Can I just interrupt this conversation and say, is it normal for a dog to be breathing that heavily? Because what I can't understand is, he's thrusting forward on the lead so much, his neck is digging into the collar so much. Can you hear that on the mic? Now, I'm not... Why doesn't he just stop pulling?
Sometimes as well.
Sometimes you've got to loosen the collar as they grow.
You've got to loosen the collar.
I should point out, I have loosened the collar quite a lot.
And sometimes you can bring water as well for them.
Oh, well, no, I always bring water. I do. I always bring water for the dog. But one time I don't, I get pulled up on a nationally broadcast podcast.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah, so go on. So you.
I mean, I don't give him any of the water.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I was out for a walk with Rob Brydon, and he said, oh, he'd been reading that Jerry Seinfeld meditates, does transcendental meditation, and swears by it, and he's been doing it for 25 years, and it's a big thing in his life. And I just thought it was quite interesting, you know, the idea of... I didn't really know anyone who'd done it, really. I wasn't aware of it as a thing, and I thought, I've heard of transcendental meditation. I'll have a crack at that, something to do, innit? just a laugh. I gave it no more thought than I'll just give it a crack. One thing led to another. I ended up getting my mantra off a bloke. Not in a pub. I actually had I booked in, because they come and sing. You have to go through a little bit of a pretentious sort of thing where you have to gift a handkerchief, an orange and a bunch of flowers to the what's he called?
Maharishi.
You think I'd know this, given that I do a podcast about Buddhism meditation. And so we did a...
Maharishi?
That's it. And, you know, the Beatles guy. So I had the meditation thing, and then I just found it was beneficial, but not in a sort of life-changing, oh my God, I'm at one with the universe type way. I just mean, if I stood on Lego, I just swore once rather than for 10 minutes. You know, that kind of calmness. It was just a bit, you know, I'd still get irritated about why Tara was still playing with Lego, but I wouldn't. I wouldn't say, can we sell some of it anymore? You know, that kind of level of just a bit. If my stress levels were a 40 out of 100, I'd gone down to about a 37. So it had some small beneficial effect. But the more I learnt about it, the more I realised that it's all that. Do you think you can drink that water?
Yeah.
Drink that, can't it? It's flowing. Would you let your dog drink that water?
Yeah, I think it's okay. I do really love the podcast, and I think it's because I have an interest in that area, but I think what I'm wary of is a slight earnestness, perhaps, that I feel can often...
Yeah, well, this is the thing, because we are, as I say in the first episode, we took our sort of interest in meditation a little bit further, did a bit of reading. The world of Buddhism and meditation is phenomenally linked. There are so many different types of Buddhism, and there's lots of different types of meditation, but certainly when you read about Buddhism, the one constant in all the readings is meditation. It's like the secret key to everything they're saying. And they basically, I mean, I'm very much paraphrasing now, but the idea that to some degree Buddhism is about not constantly relying, thinking or assuming that you are your thoughts. Everything is intellectualized, and everything you think about yourself as being is through your brain and through your thoughts. And Buddhism tries to sort of say, well, you're not what your thoughts are. You are something else. And you can't intellectualize that. You have to practice it. And the only way to really practice it is to meditate. You can read about it, but you'll never get a true insight into it until you just get on with it and meditate. And it gives you the first little glimmers of, oh yeah, I'm feeling that, I see what they're saying. These are glimmers, these are not big life-changing moments where I'm going to shave my head and go and live in Tibet, yeah. Right? Now hang on, we have to stop this now because the dog is approaching two swans and I reckon my money's on the swans. Don't you reckon? There's only one way to find out. Let's take him off the lead. Place your bets. And the swan has hissed and now we're all backing off. It didn't end well. That was foolish of me. What did I think would happen other than the swans were going to hiss at my dog? Now that moment that the swan just hissed at my dog.
Yes.
The implication is that swan is very angry or tense or whatever, because he's going and really hiss. Yeah?
Yeah.
But the theory of living in the moment is the second that swan turns the other way, I mean, we'll never know. But he's just completely fine again. Because right. Now the dog isn't harassing him and we have moved away and it's like it didn't happen. He certainly hasn't gone for a lie down and had to talk to a counsellor. Do you know what I mean? They live in the moment and they simply say, right, I now, that moment's gone, I'm now in the next moment of peace. And we don't live like that, do we?
And similarly...
imagine if someone came up to you in the park now, they didn't like the look of you, and they went, back off, right? And you backed off a bit, and you walked past. We wouldn't go, that was odd, and then carry on talking like it never happened, would we? It would affect your day, that, wouldn't it?
It would affect my life.
It would affect your... It'd affect his life, because you'd actually throw him in the river, probably, knowing you, but he'd never walk again. But
interestingly, Lee, I think that's interesting, because obviously also Ludo, who was on the receiving end of the aggression,
yeah,
is equally unaffected by it, as you say. So Ludo's just like, that thing happened, and now, oh, I'm with my pack now, and I've got a stick in my mouth, and this is fun.
But we'd be, as humans, we'd analyse it, which ironically we are now doing, but in the context of Buddhism and living in the moment. Now, look, this is a very hack-handed way of saying it, but I did notice that... that's the number one fundamental thing that I have got from meditating and doing some, and I'm always very defensive about it, some very cursory reading about Buddhism. It takes, you know, some people spend years and years in their practice and their teachings, and I'm like surfing on the top of it. I've just got a mild interest, but there are some parts of it that make me go, yeah, I get this. It feels about right, you know, it makes sense to me, all this. And so when I do the podcast, the very first episode, I do say, you know, that me and Neil firstly got interested in meditating. Secondly, we got interested in Buddhism. Thirdly, we stopped drinking alcohol. And then finally, we've become pretty much almost completely vegan. And I want to know, is there truth in what we're doing? Or are we just a couple of showbiz wankers? Because that is a definite possibility. Because if you'd have said to us at university, this is what you're going to become, we'd have been appalled. Absolutely appalled. So we're on that mission, particularly me, because he's gone, I've stopped. I've been working. I've let my egoic self, to use a little phrase, take over again as I've become more... Are you laughing? I mean, you know, you want a serious conversation with me? I'll tell you something, and you laugh in my face.
And you...
Well, like that. He's got a better strap than I've got, that dog.
What's your dog called? Coco?
Millie.
Oh, Millie.
Millie, that's my daughter's name.
Oh.
You haven't got a son called Ludo, have you?
Oh, they're getting on great, aren't they?
They're
well, aren't they?
Very nice.
Ludo and Millie.
Right, come on then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Millie. I'm both touched that that dog's called Millie. I'm slightly worried now that Millie's a dog's name. It's my daughter's name. You know. I just stoked my other son, Rover, doesn't find out. I mean, it was there for the taking. I had to say it. Right, go on.
You talk in the podcast with Neil about how Neil has gone to this retreat.
Yeah.
And you have a light-hearted dispute about the fact that you chose... not to go, and you had reasons for that, didn't you? Because you felt well. You explain why.
I don't want to give
too much of the content away.
It was early on in our journey, shall we call it? And he said, "Well, I'm going to go to a retreat and learn about." I know. I've said it. All right, judge me. I've said journey. I know. I'm hearing myself. Don't worry. This is all part of the. I've bought a dog, and now I'm going on a journey. You know what I mean?
But you decided not to go on the retreat because you didn't want to sleep in a room with other people.
Yeah. So I said. To him, oh great, do us a favour, find out they've got a twin room, and me and you will share a twin room. And he said, well, as it happens, they do have a couple of twin rooms, but you can't ask for them, you just get allotted when you turn up to a room. I said, yeah, that's right, just say we really want a twin room. And he said, no, it goes against the ethos of what the retreat's about a communal living. And I wasn't being all, I didn't think I was, being all, he thought I was being what I call la-di-da Gunnar Graham. To use an 8 Hot Mum reference. Do you remember him?
Wow.
Remember the piano player? Sergeant Major used to always say to him, look at you, laddie darker than Graham. And it's a phrase that means you're getting ideas above your station, son.
Who else have you got in your impersonation repertoire? Prince Charles and David Bellamy.
Neil felt there was a chance that I was saying, I can't share a room with other people because I'm the bloke off the telly.
There was an element of that.
Well, in fact, I'm the kind of person that before I went on television, would not want to share a dorm with somebody else. And I think there's a lot of people would be similar to me. There's an idea that if you're on the telly, or if you're in film, or if you're known at all, that everything about your life is dominated by that. So whatever, so you know, if a marriage breaks up in showbiz, you automatically assume that showbiz has got something to do with it. But if the milkman splits up with his wife, you don't go, well, that'll be the hours he's doing. Yeah. You know, there's always, it's, the job is seen to take over everything. So I think it was Stephen Fry was saying that if you're in a queue of people at the supermarket and you're not on telly and no one knows who you are, if the woman at the checkout is chattering away and having a chat with her mate who she's serving, oh, I haven't seen you for ages, how are you? And there's a queue of 20 people. If you were to vocalise it, I'm sorry, I'm not being rude, there's a big queue here, would you mind cracking on a bit? Everyone would secretly applaud you in their head. Yeah. But if you're the bloke on the telly doing that, they'd all be going, listen to the way Mr. TV Potatoes is talking to that poor woman. You know what I mean? It dominates everything.
Right. And so there's an assumption that that's your motive.
Oh, that's because
the time.
Of his job that he's become this monster.
Yeah.
You know?
Whereas we all know you were always like
I've
that.
I've always been a monster. Always. But yes, I'm not going to lie. Part of it is that, as I say on the podcast, you know, if Neil farts during the night, soon forgotten about. If I fart in the night, I'm that bloke's anecdote. You know, every time I crop up on the telly, you know, I'm not going to say it's a big thing, but the telly will come on and I'm on and he'll go, I shared a room with him once and he kept farting. Is there one big eternal energy that wants, let's call it a god for now, going, I wish more people believed in this, but to test them, they have to share a room first? I don't think so. I think they'll be just glad of any interest, wouldn't they?
I would assume, if someone's on that retreat,
yeah,
in the similar way that I'd assume if I was in group therapy or in Alcoholics Anonymous,
yeah,
I would trust in the motives of the people there.
Yeah.
I agree with you. If you were at a sort of hotel in Ayia Napa, lads on tour, stag party, of course I would understand your reticence. But I suppose, given the nature of it, I'd be surprised if those sort of people seeking spiritual enlightenment would betray someone in that way.
It's not... The betray isn't that I want people knowing. I think...
You felt self-conscious.
I'm a bit self-conscious about sharing a room with people anyway. But I have to say, I'm also well aware this is worth talking about because it all comes back to the egoic mind and the idea that if anybody, even if you're not on the telly, oh, that was a bit of a frightening noise. That was a bit like American Werewolf in London when they hear the noise for the first time. They go, did you hear that? And the other goes, no, did you hear what? But, you know, all that.
What do you think that means, Lee, when they make that noise?
You should, in case it didn't come up on your microphone, should I impersonate what we just heard?
Yeah.
We just heard. Like that. Ludo's just giving me a funny look.
What do you think?
Means, I think it might be, it's one of two things. It's a warning sign.
Is it?
To us, to not go too close.
Do you think?
Or it's some form of mating call, which would be, to me, another reason not to go too close.
Oh. We're all different.
What would you rather, a deer tried to attack you or a deer tried to make love to you?
Do you know, I've got a strange confession to make.
Oh, my God.
I think
where
it's
the
because
hell
you've,
is this leading?
You've gone all Buddhist and I feel I can open up to you.
Yeah.
I found there was something extraordinarily beautiful about that animal when I looked at it. I felt a real connection with it.
Ah, interesting. Well, that is one of the things. When you read about Buddhism and meditation, they often say that's the first glimmer. Sometimes you'll just go, for no apparent reason. I can't pretend I've had this a lot, but, you know, you'll suddenly go, I feel weirdly connected to that tree.
Yeah.
And I don't remember I'm tied to a tree. See, can't help myself. I'm not there yet. I'm skimming the surface. But, yeah, you feel connected with... And that's the whole essence of Buddhism, that we're all one entity. We're all one thing. There's no self. There's no I. I mean, there's a book called Why Buddhism is True, which looks at it in a scientific way. And I've just started reading it. It's quite interesting. You know, they talk about things that make it more of a practical possibility rather than a spiritual leap, you know.
Do you think...
I mean, look at the basics of Buddhism, that you are not yourself, right? And what that means is, right, if I said to you, who are you, what would be your response to that?
I'd say, is this going for gold and are you Henry Kelly?
Yeah, but if you weren't trying to be really topical with your references, what would you say?
Oh, hello, Mr. Milkman reference.
No, you can still have Milkman in 2020. But again, on my podcast, I do point out that whenever I want a go-to reference point from the past,
I'm sorry. Like, for example, I do to be schooled in topical, updated references by Lee Mack.
Yeah, but you're basing that on a prejudice that I've got an accent from the Northwest. No, that's not true. You've seen my act. Right, now look. The point is, it is true that I do say in my podcast that if I've made jokes about Tara having an affair, and it's always with a milkman. Because it's the go-to 1980s reference point, isn't it? The 70s and 80s. Yes. And I said to Neil, when we've done these jokes, we're both picturing the same milkman. He's got a hat on and the uniform. Do you know what I mean? He's a proper 1970s.
He's sort of, there was a series of films called Confessions of.
Yeah,
Confessions. With a guy called Robin Asquith. Yeah. And I see it as that. That's the milkman of my eye.
There's something comforting about it. There was an innocence about the 70s and 80s. Or so we thought.
There was a purity to the adultery.
There was a purity. And also, like Carry On films, I totally get that when you watch back, you go, how is some of this outrageous sexism I'm allowed? But I can't deny, like most people at the time, we just thought it was innocent fun.
Do you know, you two...
Do we suit each other? Well, you think we look like each other, that helps.
I think you seem a really good fit.
You know, when you say we look like each other, I know exactly what you mean. It's just the fact that we've both got big noses. Without that, I know you're being nice about, oh, you've both got striking eyes, but you just mean we've both got quite large noses in comparison to our faces.
Do you know what I think it is? I think it's because you have a natural exuberance.
And you think it's...
And I think that you do remind me of a puppy in some senses.
Do I?
Yeah.
Like, but both in a positive and a negative. I've got all the exuberance, but you do know at some point I might just poo when I'm not supposed to, metaphorically. I'm not going to literally poo, but you're going to go, yeah, don't do that, Lee.
One thing that's always struck me about you is that I think... How can I put this? OK, you once told me a story about how you went on tour.
Yeah.
And you decided to drive rather than let the tour manager drive.
Yeah, which is...
And I did think then that you possibly... I were quite committed to being in control of situations.
Correct.
Does that seem a fair
Not only
thing to
say? Fair, but I would suspect if I went on tour tomorrow, that would still be the same. I went on tour last year with Rob Brydon and David Mitchell, and that was only, I don't know, a year ago. And again, I did all my driving, all my own driving.
Right.
But, you know, so did Rob, and David can't drive, so he was driven. But
sure, but I would just say...
But yes, I'm a control freak when it comes to things like that. I'm still at the stage where if we go on holiday, and we have done on the last couple of years, Tara has flown with the kids and I've met them there. And I'm including Barcelona, I'm including Switzerland.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, you know why. You just said it. I'm a control freak. They won't let me sit up front and drive it. And I've asked. I've said, yeah, of course I'll fly. Can I drive? And they've said... No. And I said, well, forget it then, I'll go in the car. They said, at the very least, can you know the basics? You don't drive a plane, you fly it.
Are you scared of flying, then?
Of course I'm scared of flying. I don't have a love of driving long distances that much. Oh, no, I love flying. I just can't stand getting there quickly. Do you know the last time I flew was with Frank Skinner? I'm not saying there's a connection between me never flying again. I had a worry about flying, and me and Frank were asked to do a show for children in need called Around the World in 80 Days, where you had to go around the whole world without flying, but we just do the first leg and then hand the baton over.
Mm.
We start in the Reform Club, and then we end up getting to the border of Turkey and Syria, and then hand the baton over. And I said, well, that's perfect, because we're not allowed to fly, and I don't like flying. And I still do really like Frank as a comic. I didn't really know Frank that well. I thought it'd be great to hang out with, like, you know, without sounding too gushy, one of my comedy heroes, you know. I really loved Frank's act. And so I thought, what a great way to spend... I had a great time with him and we went. The only one problem was, I was stupid enough to not realise, once I hand that baton over, I've got to get back, haven't I? And I thought... Well, I'll get the train back. We got the train and the coach and various ways of getting there. I'll just do the same in return. But the problem is that I worked out that I would be arriving back on the afternoon of my wife's 40th birthday. And I can't say, oh, you know, your big special day, I'll be getting there at lunchtime.
Mm.
So I went on a flying course to teach me how to be less fearful of flying, where at Heathrow you get to fly a simulated jumbo jet, and it's so realistic. It's what, put it one way, when I walked out at the end, three pilots walked in because they have to be regularly tested and trained on it.
Really?
And you get to have a bit of a fly and a bit of an experience. Now they say, what do you want to do? And I go, well, what the psychologist is there as well. What is it that worries you? Give me an example. I go,
and what is it that worries you?
Well, various things, but I'll say, you know, head-on collision. Right? They go, okay, press a few buttons. The next minute, you're flying in very realistic circumstances, and in the distance, you see a dot. And they go, that plane is heading straight for us. And then I go, you know, just to check, this is supposed to be relaxed here. And they say, now, this is what would happen in this situation. And then they talk you through it, and the plane comes towards you in the distance, and they then show you what happens, and then the alarm goes off, and you still, when the alarm's going off in the cockpit, you still feel it's a long way away, and it's still under control.
So they're essentially showing you that the pilot in 99.9% of situations has the situation under control.
Under control, to the point where the plane suddenly flew past us, to the point where if there had have been, and I think there might have been, a sort of computerised version of a pilot in the other plane, I could see him. I could certainly see the writing on the side of the plane that passed us. It was close, but yet still felt all under control. And the guy said to me, "No, I'm a professional pilot, and in the 25 years I've been flying, a plane has never come that close. And even then it seemed controlled, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Now, part of the course is that when you fly back, I'll talk to you on the morning of the flight and let you know exactly the conditions and what will happen during the flight." And I was relaying it to Frank. I said, right, in about 5 minutes, I think we're going to hit a bit of turbulence. Sure enough, we hit a bit of turbulence, because this is what the man had told me. And it felt better flying back. But of course, then I got out of the habit of flying again. But I have to say, the flip of that is that I do believe people have lost the art of travel. And actually, even if I had no fear of flying at all, train travel is fantastic. I absolutely love it. So when I went to Barcelona last year on the train, it was one of the greatest days I'd ever had, the travelling.
So with Buddhism, presumably, the idea...
Hang on, sorry to interrupt, but is that the murderer again that we saw before? Oh no, this one's got kids.
I like that you're distinguishing the one we saw before. But no, my point about the Buddhism thing in relation to wanting control is that my understanding of it is that one of the other basic principles of it, of Buddhism, is that what makes us unhappy, everything that makes us unhappy is to do with
attachment
to the outcome, to a positive outcome.
Yes.
So that we get surprised if things go wrong.
You can pretty much say that almost all things that happen to you are not the result of the thing that happened, but the result of how you reacted to it, how you... You know, and that's proven by the fact that you can think of some of the biggest things that have happened in your life or my life or in anyone's life. It can be as small as that parking space wasn't available, or it can be as big as the death of a family member. The truth of the matter is, we all know people that react in a way that is different to the... I mean, look at people, the most horrific thing that can happen. You know, the murder of a child or something. I've heard... there was a horrific news item where somebody was killed, and the parents came out and said, "I hope that person gets better."
Wow.
Got a long prison sentence, and said, "I hope that person gets better." You know. And some people say, don't they? Some people come out and say, "I just want you to know that I have forgiven the murderer." They do say that, don't they? They offer forgiveness. And some people go, "I want that person executed." In fact, in America, they often try and get, if someone's trying to not get the death penalty, they will often call on the parents of the victim to speak on behalf of the murderer if they think they'll say, we will be part of the plea for, it's clemency, I think it's called, isn't it? Where you say, you know, we don't want the death penalty. If it happened to me, that situation, I know what I would like to believe, that I would be the true, pure Buddhist mentality of forgiveness and love and say, "I accept this situation." But the reality is, probably not that, because I'm not that person. I'm not some pure, tranquil Buddhist. I'm a human being who's not there, you know. But I like to think that it doesn't mean it's not the right goal, though. You know, there are those people that fit their lifestyle around their morals, and there are those people that fit their morals around their lifestyle.
That's interesting. I like that.
You know, and we all do it a bit. We all say, I believe in this, that and the other because it suits what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, so the fact that I would realistically not be that person who does this, that and the other in those awful situations doesn't mean you can't strive for it and wish that that was the case. I still think it's morally the correct thing to do. So, for example, I don't believe in capital punishment. I don't believe anybody should be killed. You can be the person that says, I don't agree with capital punishment, even though you might know that if anyone did anything to my family, I'd go hang them. Mm. You're allowed to have both of those feelings because you can still strive for what is right, even though your emotions will take over.
I know this isn't great for the brand, but as a comic, but I think you're a very kind, sort of empathetic person. And so sort of what I'm saying is it doesn't surprise me in a way that you've been interested in finding out more about this whole area and enlightenment. And I mean, I guess it's about living
a better...
Well,
I'll just interrupt you and say that it's an interesting thing. I know you say comedically when you say, I know it's not good for the brand. I know exactly what, and I've said it myself. I joke about the fact that this isn't going to help me get the Greggs advert, right? Mm. And I also pretend I've got a brand, but I have to say, I've sort of reclaimed it, meaning, well, everyone else says it, I might as well join in.
Yeah.
Because when I've had very nice comments said to me, I remember Victoria Cora Mitchell was on Countdown with me, and the joke was by Jimmy was, how are you going to get on with this Herbert today of being on your team? And she said, I'll have you know, Lee Mack is one of the most thoughtful, intelligent people I know, but by God, he hides it well. Right.
Yeah.
And it's very nice of her to say that. But whilst at the same time, the idea that I hide it well is complete news to me. Honestly, God, it really is. When people used to say to me, I like your act, Lee, but it's very mainstream, isn't it? Or opposite. I like your act and it's very mainstream, meaning it's a positive. I just still to this day don't quite know what that means. I never went on stage with an attitude of, wouldn't it be good if I had an act that was seen as being broad and that everyone would like, or that was old fashioned as well as being whatever. I just went on and did what I found was funny, and so I have no concept of that. So when I'm on Would I Lie To You, the idea that David plays this is what we read, me and David, that David plays the posh intellectual one and I play the brash, stupid northerner is news to me, and I think a bit to David, because 99% of what David said isn't about him being posh or Oxbridge educated. I'm not saying he won't occasionally do something about that, as I will as well. But most of what we say is just, we're just being based on our accents, aren't we? On our class.
Well, also, I think there's, to a degree, you're ramping up aspects of yourself when you're doing a TV performance.
And I'm sure we are, but I'll tell you what, I'm not aware of it most of the time. Occasionally I am, but most of the time.
Well, what I mean about that is that you might have had some bad news that day, or you might have had, you know, an argument with someone or whatever, and you... necessarily you can't bring that into the TV studio, so people are only ever seeing one side of you.
But more importantly, they're definitely, I still believe we live in a very class-ridden society, even if we don't realise we're doing it.
Do you think so?
Yeah, we all do it. We all base the idea that, you know, David could spend the whole episode saying really stupid things, and I could spend the whole episode saying really intellectual things, and I guarantee the result would still be the same at the end. That you'd probably go, he's the posher bloke and the educated guy, and he's the brash northern guy, based on accents. You know, if you name me one comic that sounds like they've got a strong northern accent that is also seen as the intellectual comic. No, yeah. I say to you, name a comic with a middle-class accent that's seen as an intellectual comment. Yeah. Or not even a middle-class accent, just not a northern accent. I bet your list would be longer.
Yeah.
Because there's a pre-assumed thing, and it's classism that's always existed. And listen, I'm not sitting here going, so why aren't I identified as... Because I know what I do. I write jokes, I tell jokes, and jokes in themselves are seen as a thing that... to some degree, people, you know, I'd often hear when I started out in comedy, comedians doing interviews going, my problem is I just can't write jokes, as if they're being self-deprecating. But they weren't. What they're saying is, I'm above it, but on the pretense that they're not. Do you know what I mean? And I used to go, oh, get off, get a life, mate. You know, don't be giving me this. My problem. You know, you'll often hear comedians say it. You say, the problem with me is I couldn't do any other job. I wouldn't be capable. And you go, yes, you would. You're above doing any other job, but you want to pretend that it's some self-deprecating thing that you're not capable of working in B&Q. Come on, do you want a treat?
Need a treat.
Anyway, look, we got onto the subject of class, and it doesn't matter what people think anyway, because like I was saying, I tried to give you an introduction, this cack-handed introduction, because I don't know anything about the subject myself, and say, if someone said, who are you, what would you say?
Yeah.
And what was the answer to that question? You'd say your name, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So who are you then? You go, I'm Emily Dean, broadcaster extraordinaire, author, podcaster, and friend to the stars. Because that's what you say to me that's what's on your answering machine message. Drop that, please, drop that.
But that interests me, Lee, about defining yourself, because I think for me, I think that was probably why I was not in such a great space for quite a long period of my life, because when someone said, who are you, my reaction was to say, oh, what do you do, and tell me about you.
Yeah.
Because I felt slightly, it's just that sense of
what do you identify as?
Yeah, it's like I felt uncomfortable because I didn't really identify as anything. I just would sort of,
well, this is the thing about what Buddhism concentrates on. It talks about the labels and stuff. So on the surface level, it will say, you know, well, don't worry about, you know, saying that you are a whatever, broadcaster,
yeah,
or a, because that's not who you are. That's what you do for a living. That's not who you are as a person.
Yes.
But then you start getting a bit deeper with that, and it starts to get a bit screws with your head a little bit, because then you go, and if you're going to follow through the Buddhism logic, you might even say, you're not even Emily. That's just something that your parents decided they were going to call you.
Yeah.
That's not who you are, is it? If your name is, if you are Emily, then it begs the question, who was my child for 3 months? Because we didn't name him.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't give our children names for months.
Yeah.
We just kept calling him the baby because we couldn't work out what to call our children. We're not the kind of family that have ever given names whilst they're inside my wife. We have to have a look at them and check them out. I mean, on a very simple level, you go, are you going to give them a boy or girl's name? And then you go into a whole different level of label. And then when you start getting into the serious Buddhism, you start going, you're not even your body. And it gets very deep, and it gets very hard to understand, and you start questioning, is it pretentious or is it true? But real Buddhists believe you're not even, this body's just a little thing you're carrying around for a while. Your true self is eternal, and it gets very deep and very hard to understand, if I'm going to be honest.
Do you think it's made you happier? I always would have, yours strike me as, you know, that sunshine and showers idea of a person, which I guess I'm a bit like that. I'm either very up or very down.
Yeah.
You strike me as very consistently up, but I don't know if that's the case.
Am I consistently? I don't. It's a very hard. Asking if someone is happy is one of the hardest questions in the world to answer, isn't it? Are you happy? And you go, I remember when I did my book, I went to see a psychiatrist because the book, as you know, was interspersed with a psychiatrist.
Mm.
And so I went to see the psychiatrist. Could you read the chapters and then ask me questions about the chapters? Because the publisher doesn't think it's gone very deep. And I can have my cake and eat it. I don't want to go deep, but if I have a psychiatrist interspersing it, it'd look like I've made the effort whilst keeping it light at the same time and turned it into a sketch, which is what I did in the book. But during those conversations, I remember conversations about, you know, how would you label your happiness from 1 to 10 and all that. And what a difficult question. If I said to you, how happy are you from 1 to 10? What is the scale you're going by? If you say, guess the temperature in this room, you have something to compare it to, don't you? You go, well, my living room's 21 degrees, so I'm going to guess this is a bit colder, let's go for a 19. You've got something to go by, but you've not lived in anyone else's body, so how do you know what scale you are? If we swap bodies, you might go, oh no, I'm happier than that. Or you might go, blimey, he's a lot calmer than he comes across. You just don't know.
No, but I would compare it to the most sad I've ever felt.
Yeah.
And I would say, right, the most sad I've ever felt,
say that was a zero.
Yeah.
And what's,
so today, I'd say,
but you've only ever reached one, haven't you,
nine.
Before today? This is a nine happiness.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
What I happiness mean, is this for what, you?
Which was your podcast day that got a 10? Classic performer mentality. It's a nine, but it reads like a 10. That's the way I'll interpret it.
Ludo brings it up that extra one to the 10.
That's nice.
Do you know what, Lee? I've loved our walk. I love spending time with Ludo. I really think you found the right dog for you.
I have to say, I am actually in love with my dog.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm properly in love with my dog. I wake up in the morning, we've got a video camera in his cage. I'm going to call it a cage. He only sleeps in it. We don't cage him up all day. And we've got a video camera. And the main reason the video camera is there, so if he's up and about in the morning, I know to get down quick to let him out so he doesn't poo inside the cage, right? But actually, I found myself just looking at it in the morning. I look to see if he's awake, and when he's asleep, I just keep looking at it. I mean, that's like when you first meet a girl and you just like look at the photo even.
And you keep her in the cage.
Keep her in the cage and then take her out for a poo in the morning. You know, Tara's totally house trained now, which is lovely.
Do you think you've changed?
Since getting a dog?
I think it does change you a bit.
I think it does. I think what it does is, I've always said that when you have kids, what it does is it forces you to not be selfish. It doesn't mean that you become spiritually less selfish. You've got no choice.
Yeah.
You've got to change the nappy. You've got to feed the child. You've got to think about somebody else. And stopping thinking about yourself, even if you don't believe in any meditation or Buddhism, is almost always a good thing. That's part of the reason why if you help someone else, it's not just a spiritually good thing to help somebody else. It just stops you thinking about yourself. And when you stop thinking about yourself, I mean, have you ever done a really mundane job like digging holes in the garden? Where, no, of course you haven't. Look at the look on your face. How would I begin to do that? If you do a really mundane job that has no, that you don't have to put any thought into.
No, it's like that Gandhi
washing
thing.
Up.
Gandhi always said, you know, that thing about cleaning the toilet. That was his thing, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah,
what
he made
he
his wife clean the toilet. He felt everyone should do that because it's kind of grounding, isn't it?
I know you well enough to know that you'd be the kind of person that would make sure that they personally made the phone call. Not get someone else to do it. You make the phone call that books the person that cleans your toilet. And that's why I've always liked you, Emily. You're grounded. You don't get... A lot of people get their PA to book the cleaner, but you will phone them yourself. And you'll even show them where the toilet is and everything. And that's why you are Emily D. But you're not, because
Lee,
that's
I've
just
loved,
a label.
I've loved today. And I should say, I thoroughly recommend your podcast. I've listened to all of them.
I think the kind of people that will enjoy it, if you are properly into meditation, seriously, and seriously into Buddhism, you might be disappointed. I'll be honest, because...
Can you use that maybe for a quote?
Use that as the quote. Because I think that we are...
You might be disappointed.
You might be disappointed. However, if you're the kind of person that has a sense that there's some truth in it all, but doesn't know how to get there, because you keep going, I meditate, but I keep thinking about other things and I can't do it. This podcast for you, because that's what we're like. Well, that's what I'm like. I can't. I mean, within 2 minutes of any meditation, I'm thinking, have I fed the dog? And I used to think that before I got a dog. That's how much my mind wanders.
Lee, thank you. And bye, Ludo.
Say bye.
Ludo.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that. And do remember to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.